welcome back to Behind the Screens. I'm Ryan Preventure.
I'm Simon Burton.
I'm Matthew Liebman. I should point out, this isn't the Behind the Screens that NATO launched at CinemaCon 3 weeks ago. This is the Behind the Screens podcast that's been around for 3 years. So, you know, in case there's any confusion, original and the best here, gents. Have you seen this Wolverine, Deadpool Wolverine trailer yet?
I haven't seen it yet. I saw the Disney presentation, but I haven't seen the trailer yet.
This is outstanding. So first of all, what I loved about it is they did a teaser for the trailer last night, which was a mashup of old footage and plastic figurines. So they heralded the launch. But, you know, we've said this is Marvel Studios' first R-rated movie. It's not a soft R, at least from the language in the trailer. They're not diluting Deadpool as he makes his leap from Fox over to Disney. So, you know, as you say, we saw some footage at CinemaCon. I don't think we can say much about that at all. But they also had a turn off your phones PSA before the Disney session that was full on the ground funny. So, you know, Marvel might be back, at least with one title, and in a whole new way from the way Disney's used to earning its Marvel dollars. So something to look forward to on July 26. But in terms of this weekend, Simon, no Marvel film, but we did have a horror title at the top in what was a somewhat close three-way horse race at the domestic box office. Do you want to take us through Abigail, how it did domestically and what it might have earned around the world?
Sure. Three-way horse race at the top. That's
sound like you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Good on you, Matt. Abigail from Universal. Domestically, it opened in second position, taking $10.2 million from 3,384 theaters. Internationally, a bit softer. It only took $5 million from 62 territories. The leading markets, Mexico with 850K, the UK Ireland taking 750K, and Australia in third position with 426K. Bringing its worldwide opening weekend to $15.2 million.
Yeah, not a bad result from the directors of the last two Scream titles. I think they're probably counting their blessings that they jumped off the dumpster fire that's the next one for Scream for this particular title. And given its production cost is only $28 million, I think it's off to a pretty good start. Who was the audience for Abigail, Ryan?
Really exactly what you'd imagine. Some of the comparable films were The First Omen, Imaginary, Immaculate, Night Swim. And Night Swim has been showing up in all of these. So somehow that's a real comp for this particular type of horror films. Thanksgiving, Late Night with the Devil, Monkey Man, and Lisa Frankenstein. So for the most part, either a hard action film or horror. And everything that's has come out recently. These are all very, very recent comps. When we look at the frequency, we did compare with the First Omen since the box office was pretty close there. The first film we'll be looking at is Abigail, and the second will be The First Omen. Infrequent moviegoers for Abigail was 22% compared to 30% for The First Omen. Occasionals were 26% compared to 30%. Frequents were 38% compared to 31%. But what was interesting here, for Abigail, we had 14% of the audience were very frequent moviegoers compared to 9% for The First Omen. So you are seeing these audiences that just come back and come back and come back to a particular set of horror films. And it is a genre that probably more than any other that you tend to see audiences come back to. So in marketing these kind of films, using comps like this can be very helpful to try to get people maybe on the second weekend. We did see a little bit of an older audience as you'd expect in films like this. So we're going to start with the 18 to 24, which was 14% for Abigail compared to 18% for The First Omen. 25 to 34 was 26 to 25, almost exactly the same. 35 to 44 was 23 compared to 18. So a little bit of an older audience, interestingly, for Abigail. 45 to 54, 18 to 16%. And 55 to 64, 10% across the board. Not much for the 65 and older, which is 4% compared to 6%. For Abigail, males were 59%, so skewing a little bit older, but a little bit more male centric. But you know, when you look at these kind of audiences, When you have the very frequency and your frequency at 38%, trying to maybe get those people that haven't come back for a while to go see this film because it had a reasonably good cinema score and actually a pretty decent Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah, I think that's just rounding out what you were saying about that reception in the marketplace. They were pretty consistent as well. Abigail was 84% from the reviewers, 87% from audiences, and a solid B from cinema score, which is pretty good for the horror genre. You know, we've said time and time again that horror is the genre that keeps pulling people in. And as you say, Ryan, that's why it's synced to the frequent moviegoers. I also wonder whether there's, you know, is this a self-fulfilling cycle? We haven't done the analysis, but there certainly seems a horror title every couple of weeks, which gives horror fans a reason to come back. So are they coming back because they're inherently frequent, or are they coming back because it's a segment that's catered to? And, you know, we talk about rom-coms aren't really finding an audience until a rom-com shows up and finds an audience. And when we look at that supply and demand of movies as we do week in, week out, it would be great to see some more diversity to see if there is a pent-up audience and some of those people who might only come out for, you know, the latest rom-com like Anyone But You would be more frequent if they were catered to more often. So, you know, it's kind of that chicken and egg scenario with horror. It'd be nice to see if we could prove which is which came first by comparing it to other genres. The next big new release of the week was Guy Ritchie's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. He's having a moment. That guy's prolific at the moment. Simon, how did the box office look for the latest from Guy Ritchie?
Domestically, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare took $9 million on a tick over 2,800 theatres. It also released in 12 international territories, taking nearly $1 million, bringing the worldwide opening to $9.8 million.
We were looking at how many he's released recently. So you go back just a year or so ago and Operation Fortune came out. This same weekend last year was Guy Ritchie's Covenant. That grossed 6.4 mil, so a little way behind this. This latest one, Ungentlemanly Warfare, was behind The Gentleman. So Gentleman finished first. It was 1.6 mil ahead of this most recent release back in January 2020. But Ungentlemanly Warfare is 750K ahead of May 2021's Wrath of Man. So there is a lot of Guy Ritchie out there, especially when you add The Gentleman series on Netflix. And it seems remarkably consistent. Ryan, you saw this film. I think one of the things, I haven't, but one of the things I'd say when I look at this list is I wish the market would respond a little bit more because he's producing some great fun content and movies at the moment. What were your views on Ungentlemanly Warfare?
I was pleasantly surprised. I had very, very, not low expectations, but hadn't really looked too high to this. And it's a fantastic film. It's great. It's incredibly violent. So if that's a problem for some moviegoers, that there's that. But you know what? It is a fantastic kind of spy World War II. It's if you don't know the story, the actual story of it, it's a real nice surprise this time of year. Honestly, it's one of my favorites of this year so far. It's just an absolutely fantastic film.
And yeah, I know we try and be statistically significant with our data here, but just talking from my own opinion, I thought Operation Fortune was very much hard done by, and I think we might have missed a fun B-grade franchise if it had found an audience. So I don't know whether this one has mini franchise potential, Ryan, but the best way to start with understanding that, aside from the box office, is the audience. So who came along and saw the most recent from Guy Ritchie?
Well, again, it's a little bit of just movies that have been out recently and action films. You have Argyle, Monkey Man, both action films, Civil War, more recent film, Dune Part 2, The Beekeeper, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, Land of Bad, In the Land of Saint and Sinners. So really a little bit of a bunch of amalgamation of movies, but we went with Argyle simply because it is an action film and has the same lead cast member in both of the films with Henry Cavill. The frequency, so we'll be comparing, well, I'm going to not say the entire title, we'll say Ministry compared to Argyle. Infrequent moviegoers was 22% compared to 32% for Argyle. Occasionals was 28 to 33. 38 to 35% were frequent moviegoers. And again, very frequent moviegoers came out for this one at 13% compared to 5% for Argyle. Again, what you're seeing is, I think in a number of these movies, is just there are some people that are just going out seeing films, and those are great moviegoers. Of course, we'd like a lot more of those, but if we can push those less frequent moviegoers into the very frequents and get them coming even more often, that's great for everybody. But we always want to be bringing back. That's the most important thing. But when we look at this, it was a little bit of an older audience. The 25 to 34 was 20% compared to 15. 35 to 44, 19 compared to 15. 45 to 54 was 20% compared to 18. Very close audience age range here. 55 to 64 was 17% for Ministry compared to 19% for Argyle. But really an older audience for both films. 65 and older, Ministry had 14% compared to 20% for Argyle, which is interesting that, again, you're seeing a little bit of an older audience, a World War II film, so not terribly unsurprising. And males were a little more male-driven on this one at 66%. What you're seeing is male audiences are kind of the key for both of these, so you're going to take a little bit from one audience than the other.
Yeah, you'd expect it. Guy Ritchie does go a little bit more on the male side. I think when you're looking at the marketing for this, I can't help but wonder if the comms channels that you would use might be a little less the email and SMS to existing members, but using this as a seed audience for social and digital advertising. You know, if you can overlay people who have Netflix, both with The Witcher from Henry Cavill and The Gentleman, the most recent from Guy Ritchie, on the TV platform, or if you can find people who have an Apple TV subscription, to your point, with Henry Cavill and Argyle, it might break out from the ecosystem. So I wonder if this one does lend itself there if we want to try and pull that incremental audience in on the exhibitor side. But again, very well received on the Rotten Tomatoes side. The reviewers gave it a solid 72%, but like you, it sounds like those who saw it loved it. It's sitting at 94% from the audience on Rotten Tomatoes and an A- from CinemaScore. The final new release of the week is one from Crunchyroll, and I thought it might be worth you diving into it first, Simon, and then Ryan, because, of course, they did kick off the studio presentations at CinemaCon. They are looking to have a bigger presence, and they've had some success to date. So we have another title with X in the name, so we're going to go with Spy Family Code, and let's look at the dollars to date and then flick over to Ryan for the audience.
Yeah, talking about things having a moment, Matt, these titles with an X in the title, there's two of them in the top five of the domestic markets this weekend. So
I'm with you. I think we need an old-fashioned ampersand. And I think that's where Deadpool and Wolverine's going to succeed, because instead of Deadpool X Wolverine, which if any film's going to justify it, it's the one with the X-Man in it, they went with an old-fashioned ampersand. And we know how to say it when we buy our tickets.
You are a true thought leader, Matt. Let's talk about the grosses for Spy Family Code this past weekend. $4.8 million at the domestic box office, a tick over 2,000 theaters. Another $1.5 million from the international market, bringing the worldwide cum to date now of $59.4 million.
And Ryan, is this audience any different from some of the others we're seeing? Are we starting to see it break out at all?
No, not really. This is a very similar audience. Some of the comps are Suzume, the Demon Slayer franchise, the time that I got reincarnated as slime, My Hero Academia films, Jujutsu Kaisen, and the movie that won Best Animated Film, The Boy and the Heron, from last year. And we decided to look at Suzume as the comp, so we'll be doing Spy and Suzume. Infrequent moviegoers were not that far off. People, you know, when they come to these, they tend to see anime films, but they might not be back for a while because they're not coming out as consistently. Infrequent moviegoers were 45 compared to 35%. Occasionals across the board, very close, at the same, 33%. Frequent moviegoers were where we changed a little, 18% compared to 26%, and very frequent were 4% compared to 6%. Well, what we saw here was a somewhat close similarity in age as well. The 18 to 24 was 21% compared to 29. 25 to 34, this was pretty high, 42% compared to 38. And 35 to 44 was 15 to 11%. So really there's that middle age range that you're finding there. And males were 59% compared to 67% for Suzume. So really the audiences are just, they're the same audiences that come out. And if you're interested in kind of breaking out your audiences, maybe finding some movies that are a little outside of the comps that we provided, to see if you can get those people to maybe come see this, because it was well liked by the people that saw it, which I'm sure you'll be able to tell us, Matt.
Yeah, look, I think this is one of those ones where at the moment, as you say, it tends to play those fanboys, those who are into anime and so on. But I wonder what it takes for this to become family fair, general family fair. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit in a second about how this particular week at the box office, week 16, struggled. And one of the reasons for that is the prior two week 16 had family films. So, you know, as you say, it's great that we have a segment that comes in specifically for this. It's purely incremental, but what can we do to break out? And I wonder if a Kung Fu Panda 4 or something that is sort of broadly adjacent can attract a broader audience, maybe with some sort of pricing promotion so that people trial at a lower, you know, price risk at least. But yeah, you're saying the audience love it. Those who come do. But so the audience for Rotten Tomatoes is sitting at 98%. Reviewers like this one too at 96%, and it sits at an A cinema score. So, Simon, we've talked about the three new releases so far this week, but only one of those got on the podium for a top three medal. Do you want to go through the domestic box office and talk about some of those holdovers that did well?
Absolutely. Civil War remained the top film domestically this past weekend, taking $11.1 million, a 56% drop off its opening weekend, bringing its domestic cum to nearly $45 million. Looking at that title globally, it was also the second highest grossing film globally this past weekend, taking $21.4 million, bringing its global cum to $62 million. So continuing to kick on in the international space. Godzilla Kong New Empire continued its reign at number one globally, taking $31.1 million. And Kung Fu Panda 4 was in third position, taking $19.9 million. Approaching some milestones, both Godzilla Kong and Kung Fu Panda 4 sneaking up on the $500 million global result. And Dune Part 2 is approaching the $700 million mark globally.
So again, the films are out there. When films are out there, people will show up and drive that box office. We just need a little bit more of them. And I think that really is the story of week 16, where the total domestic box office was just $64 million compared to $125 million, where Mario topped the box office in its third week. It grossed $60 million in week three last year. We're also down on 2022, which grossed $30 million more. It grossed $94 million. When The Bad Guys opened to 24 mil. So again, it's that lack of a family film, still coasting on Kung Fu Panda in its seventh week, that led me to think if we're going to pull these Crunchyroll titles out, if they're standing as tall as they can be and wanting to have a presence at CinemaCon and get the exhibitors excited, how do we make that a general form of family entertainment? Surely it won't do as well as a Kung Fu Panda, but it might be more than a one-week wonder than what we see for these titles. So looking ahead, Ryan, what can we see at the box office next week? Is it going to change our fortunes?
I don't think we're there quite yet. We've got one more week until we start to hit what we would consider the summer box office. But we've got some good films. We've got Challengers from United Artists, the Zendaya film. And we've got Boy Kills World from Roadside Attractions with Bill Skarsgård. So we've got some interesting films coming out. Challengers did move from last year to this year, and I know people have been kind of looking forward to this, but we'll see whether it can have a real breakout. But we need Fall Guy more than anything, but we'll be seeing him on May 3rd.
Yeah, and Simon, is there anything you can tell us about Fall Guy? I know we're a couple of weeks out. We might spend a bit more time with it next week, but what are you seeing in the pre-sales at the moment?
Yeah, we're seeing the pre-sales build consistently for Fall Guy, but a bit too early to do any accurate comps. So we might hold that for next week's edition.
Well, there's a reason for people to tune in next week. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Ryan. We'll catch you next week for the original and best Behind the Screens.
Moveo and Numero are two of the businesses within the Vista Group, the world-leading provider of technology solutions to the global film industry. For more moviegoer insights, be sure to visit moviegoer.co and follow Moveo, Numero, and Vista Group on Twitter and LinkedIn. The Behind the Screens podcast is produced by Grace Furness and edited by Patrick Hanna.